In the process of evangelism, once you put forward the gospel of Jesus Christ, people do come back at you with questions, don't they? Now, sometimes those questions are people just running away from the truth, and you need to point that out to them gently and lovingly and kindly. But sometimes they're questions that are real and worry people's minds. John's job with us on the campus won't fundamentally be doing that. He will at one dialogue meeting in a college, I've forgotten which one, Peter Bolt's got that under control, so I suppose it's Basser or Baxter. But by and large, he'll be just teaching us the Bible. However, John's had a lot of experience through this thing called dialogue evangelism, which we won't go into, but a lot of experience in fielding people's questions. So I thought for a while I would take the position of a non-Christian and show the questions that you've always heard at John, and let's see how he handles them, so that we can learn ourselves how we can handle the questions that people throw to us. I think one of the easiest ways of learning that is hearing somebody doing it. Can I remind you, no one ever has a conversation like this, in that no one ever gets as many rough and dirty questions in one sitting as I'm about to ever.
That's why I wore my white jumper, so you'd know that I'm the goodie. The man.
I would have borrowed Peter Bolt's moustache, but he wouldn't let the part. You know, usually a person has one or two problem questions. But after you've been around the traps for a while, there works out to be seven or eight questions that cumulatively people have. And so we'll have a whirl through most of those in the next half hour or so. And you might like to pick up some of the clues as ways in terms of answering it. Let me start right back at rock bottom. John, you've been telling me about Jesus and about God and all the rest of it. But I don't even know there is a God. How can you prove to me there is a God?
Well, it depends what you mean by proof. But if you mean, can I demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt, I think I can do that through the person of Jesus.
But that's all very good. I want to know about God.
Well, I'm saying that Jesus turns up on the scene and he says, I am God in the flesh, and I've come to show you exactly what God is like.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's lots of blokes up in North Ryde who walk around saying, I am God. Why should I believe your bloke?
Well, you ought to actually, that's a very good reason. In fact, it is the very reason why I believe that God is in the person of Jesus rather than the blokes in North Ryde. Because when you go and look at the documents about Jesus, you aren't left too many alternatives. And one of the alternatives is that he is psychotic. And I think, as I read it, there doesn't seem to me to be any evidence to support that.
But what's the evidence that you can have about Jesus?
Well, the same evidence as you can have for anything from the past.
Yes, but
history.
But it's all been tampered and fiddled with, hasn't it? I mean, you can't know that what they were writing back whenever they were writing, you can't know that any of that's got any relationship with what's done today, because, you couldn't even remember.
Wait a minute, Philip. I'm sorry, what is the question again?
You couldn't even remember what your talk was, you see, that you gave the script for a couple of weeks ago. How can you know that what was written way back there has got any veracity to it?
Well, I actually think that that is not accurate, Philip. People do remember things that happened in the past. It depends how important the incident was, and it depends how much you're asked to remember. But I want to suggest to you that I could say something to you, and you would be able to finish it, and it would surprise me if you hadn't learnt it 10 years ago at least. Try this one. Mary had a little lamb. Now, have you not remembered that accurately over the past 10 years? Right, so it's possible to remember something quite inconsequential for 10 years.
Yes, but as it's passed down from generation to generation, it gets modified and improved and changed, doesn't it?
Well, it would if that's what had happened. But we have it written down. The New Testament was actually written down within 20 years of the death of Jesus. So from then onwards, it isn't passed down. All it is copied.
I mean, the whole New Testament is written within 20 years.
The Gospels, by the time Luke writes his Gospel, he tells us that there are so many accounts of Jesus in circulation, and he is not an eyewitness, that he's gone back to the eyewitnesses to check out what actually happened. And then he claims to have put an account together from the eyewitnesses. And I'm saying that's excellent history. That's exactly the way you're likely to get accurate work.
Yeah, but how do you know that what he wrote is what you now own? Because it's been translated, and you can't be sure the translators have got it right, and because it's been copied and copied and copied. And you haven't got the original, have you?
No. No, we've got it. The oldest copy we've got, Philip, is round about the middle of the 3rd century. So we know from the 3rd century to the 20th century that the changes are inconsequential. You can go to the British Museum and see the copy we've got there. And there's one in the Vatican Library also. And you've got a full New Testament there. Now, we've got a John's Gospel, a full John's Gospel, that dates back 100 years earlier. And so there's no tampering with that one. Mind you, you can see as you go along that the copyists have made mistakes, like anybody does when they copy. The same line's been copied twice, or a line's been left out, which subsequently has been corrected. But you've got a lot of documents floating around.
All right, but what about those 200 years in the first place? How do you know that it all hasn't been junked up in the 200-year period?
Well, it's a complicated study, and I can lend you a book called The New Testament Documents, Are They Reliable? By F.F. Bruce, and you might like to do that. But the way they've gone about verifying it is this. You've got the original documents, and then you've got people at the time of the original document writing commentaries on the documents. Now, those commentaries by those blokes who are writing from the original, they are copied. And the oldest copies of those we've got are nothing like the New Testament. So the oldest copies of those, which are called the early church fathers, they'll date back to about, I think probably the earliest copy of those we've got goes back to about the 11th century. But we've got enough of the New Testament copied by those into their manuscripts, which have had the maximum opportunity for error on translation all the way down, for us to piece from the 10th century ones of those a New Testament back together, and it's substantially non-different from the 3rd century one that we've got back there.
Yeah, but this is all very good. I mean, when I'm dealing with real history, people like Caesar and Alexander the Great, and people like that, I mean, I know the evidences are there for those people that are very clear, but for an obscure Jewish person who's really not popular until centuries later because of the church popularises him, how can I know that that's any good?
Well, that depends on how do you know anything is accurate from the past. When you look at the ABC News, do you believe it and why? Because it's in the past and it's happened. Now, why do you believe it's accurate, if you do believe it?
Because they're unbiased, whereas the New Testament, they're biased.
Well, that's the great problem, Philip, all the time. You see, everybody who writes a history is biased, because it's hard work writing a book, I can tell you that now. It's hard work writing a book, and you don't write it unless you've got some reason for doing it. Now, everybody who writes their book is biased, because they think it's worth recording. Now, does that mean it's inaccurate? Because I think it's important. I'm saying it might be the reason, if you in fact believe it to be true for a good reason, that you take care to do it more accurately.
But why can't we have some histories of Jesus from people who are anti-Christian, so we can balance off the ones that you've got that are all Christian?
Well, you won't, because most people don't take the trouble to write them. I mean, hardly anybody takes the trouble to write against something. Now, there are other histories about Jesus which the church, the apostles and the people who heard the apostles preach, they said, no, look, those stories are a hogwash. That isn't what Jesus did or said. And you can actually find them. There's one called the Gospel of Thomas. And you can read about that, and it's very interesting indeed, and tells interesting stories about how when Jesus was a little boy and made mud pies, and he was terribly frustrated because they turned into pigeons and flew away. He was even doing miracles as a baby child. And you can easily see why they were rejected. Now, it wasn't that there weren't other documents on the float, but they took great care to say, the eyewitnesses said, no, that is not what Jesus said and did. None of those of us who'd been with him all the time ever heard that story. And so they rejected it. And it wasn't as if the only documents they received were the documents which said what they wanted to say, in a sense. They took great care to see whether, in fact, anyone had heard Jesus say these things or do them. And you see, the later the document gets on the plate, the less chance it's got of having the eyewitness authentication there. And by the time you get to the 3rd century, any Tom, Dick or Harry can write a gospel, say Jesus said anything.
All right. Let's just assume for a moment, not that I agree with you, but assume for a moment that what you've got in the gospel is about Jesus is substantially right.
Right.
Why would you believe it anyway? I mean, just to say that they, you know, they truly record the fact that he went around saying he's God.
Well,
you can truly record a black up in North Ryde saying he's God.
That is right, Philip. And I'm saying, why should I believe Jesus and not the man in North Ryde? And it's got to do with the character of the person you meet when you read the history. Because when I read about Jesus, in fact, in a sense, you'll have to do this for yourself because only you can do this. You see, you need to pick up a gospel and read it. And when I pick up the gospel, I can only speak for myself on this one, I'm saying this is what I find when I confront the person of Jesus, that he is fine. He's a very appealing person. When he talks about the life situation, I keep finding myself saying, that's right. That's right. That is exactly what life is about. And I find myself saying, I'd like to be like him. And if he's mad, it'd be nice to have a world full of nuts like him. And I'm saying, I'd like you to live like him when you treat me. Now, in fact, if I could take away the bits where he says he's God, you'd say this man is a very fine teacher for people to live. But I don't think you can extricate the other bits because everything's going along plain sailing and you're saying, yeah, this is right, this is right, this is right. And suddenly he drops a terrible clangor and says, and I'm right because I'm God.
All right, so he's a lovable loony. But now, why not some of the other lovable loonies like Muhammad or like...
No, they're not loonies. I'm not even sure that they're lovable. But some of them are. Some of them are. But none of them are making the claims of Jesus. Jesus is saying, on the great day when everybody comes to judgment, you'll stand before me, and I'll decide whether you'll go to heaven or whether you go to hell. Now, he said, if you really want to know what God is like, look at me. When you get to the end and Jesus has risen from the dead and Thomas says to him, you're my Lord and my God, Jesus says, spot on. Sorry, that's a loose translation. You're right. You're right. That's who I am. Now, what I'm saying is, Philip, you've got Muhammad and you've got the one who sits under the bow tree and the others. Now, they're not claiming to be God. They're claiming to bring insights for life. They're claiming to bring the information about God. But Jesus made the claims which I believe are actually unique. And that's why it's worth looking at it, because he's saying, I have not come to tell you primarily about God, I have come to demonstrate God in your midst. And I'm saying that if he's not God, there's either something radically wrong with him, or it's a terrific con. Now I'm saying in the end, only you yourself could work out where you think the evidence leads you to go. But from my point of view, having read the Gospels, I cannot believe that he's mad. I don't see any marks of psychosis about him. I don't think he's in that situation at all. And I can't see any evidence for the con. What's there in it for him?
Okay, let's just assume then, just for the sake of the argument,
okay,
because it's getting too easy for you.
Yep.
That Jesus is a God.
Yep.
In fact, you want to say he's the God.
Yep. I say it because he says it.
Oh, okay. You're a second-class loony.
Yes, if that's how you define loony, and I'm inviting you to be one because I'm saying I think it'll be helpful to you.
Why is the world so mucked up? This bloke's running the world.
Mm-hmm.
Why are there babies who are born deformed? Why are there famines? Why are there earthquakes? Why is there the mess that the world is in?
I don't know the answer to that in the end.
Does your loony friend know?
Well, if he is, he hasn't told me. And that's the great problem, because when he doesn't tell me something, I've got no way of finding out, any more than I've got any way of finding out about you if you don't want to tell me.
Yeah, but hang on. this one, you see, you want to say he is just the kind of person I want my next door neighbour to be like.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good, loving one. Mm-hmm. You want to say he's a mighty powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
He's mighty and powerful and he's very loving, mm-hmm. and yet the world that's under his control is mucked up.
Oh, I can say more than I've said then, Philip. I didn't realise that's what you were saying. But it's mucked up because you and I have done it, and because God has made us big enough to do it. And you can't have your cake and eat it too. Now, you may think that it was a pretty risky thing for God to do, but the Bible says when God made man, he made him just a little less than God.
All right. Look, this free will defense and all that kind of thing will work for some things. Like, okay, I can understand that my liver's all shot to pieces because I've been the alcoholic.
Okay.
But what about that volcano erupted in Canada? What about the earthquake somewhere else? I mean, I didn't do that.
Well, Philippa, that's a hard question, isn't it? Let me tell you, brother, here's a thing for you to ponder. An earthquake in the Sahara doesn't do any damage at all. And an earthquake in northern Italy does more damage than it does in Hokkaido. Why?
Because there are people.
No,
hurt by.
No, because the people in Hokkaido build houses that withstand the shake. And in northern Italy, they don't. Now, should God get the blame for the people who get killed in northern Italy but not the ones in Hokkaido? God get the blame because people are stupid or willful?
But it's not their stupid fault that the thing
erupts. No, I'm saying they know it's likely to, and they don't take the precautions.
Not everybody knows it's likely to.
Well, I'm saying 9 times out of 10 they do. But I'm saying, I don't understand it, Philip. The Bible takes the point of view that so significant is our people, so significant are people, that when they turn their back on, that the whole creation was made for them to rule it. And that when they turned their back on God, the whole creation fell out of joint in a way which I don't actually understand. But instead of it being an environment where it was easy to live in and always hospitable for mankind, it became an environment where it was not like that. And the Bible takes the point of view that the whole creation fell out of joint when man turned their back on God.
So because I am sinful, because I have turned my back on God, my children might be born blind or lame or something like that.
Well, it's not as specific as that, Philip. It's because I am sinful that they might.
Because you're sinful, my children will be born
and
blind
you,
or lame.
And,
or
yeah, like and you and me and everyone else. That it's like everybody being in a pond and shotting their muck in. And we're all swimming around in the pond together. And some people survive it better than others, but everyone shots their muck in. Everyone's made their contribution. If you don't like it, that I'll give you an alternative one. That's very crude. Supposing we're all in a great metal room with submachine guns, and we all start firing the bullets round, and they're all whizzing around and bouncing all over the place, you're not too sure who got hit by who. But because you're firing, it's fair enough. Now, there's a sense in which the whole world is properly mucked up because of our sin. And so badly mucked up is it, that if you want to put it this way, it's unfair. Why should I be fitting well when a girl in the church I go to is dying with leukemia with 2 kids not at school and 1 just started? Now, there's a sense in which our rebellion against God and the consequences of it are rotten. And they are so rotten that the whole thing is all up the pole. And we believe it. And we say, if you put your hope in this world only, well, you might as well blow your brains out now. But we actually think there's a life after this one, and that's why we're urging people to get ready for it, because you've got the bad end of the stick in this one. Make sure you don't end up in the same bog in the next one.
There you go again, you see? It's all back to the opium of the masses, isn't it? You're just so concerned with the pie in the sky when you die, which just helps people to accommodate themselves to a rotten system now.
Unless it's true.
Yeah, but you're not doing anything to help people live now in this
world. Yes, I do. I teach them to live like Jesus, who spends his entire life helping people. You pick up the book and read it.
But you're saying the bullets are whizzing around everywhere. Mm-hmm. So now I start living like Jesus so that I can make bullets whizzing around everywhere. Yes. How does living like Jesus stop me collecting the bullets?
It doesn't stop you collecting the bullets, but you might be able to help me when I'm hit with one. And what's more, I'm going to try and help you. And whether you like it or not, I'm committed to helping you because of Jesus. Whereas before I turned to Jesus, I was committed to looking after myself and me alone.
But surely all I need to do is to restructure the society that causes such problems.
Well, if you think you can teach people to be unselfish, Philip, bully for you. But I reckon you'll be battling. And my looking around shows me that every now and again you get some noble soul who rises up and calls on people to be unselfish and tries desperately to do it, but he can't actually do it ultimately himself, and he can't get his followers to do it either.
So what we do is go up into a holy huddle and pray, and it'll all look after itself.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying be like Jesus. See, the trouble, Philip, is you want to talk about it, but you haven't read the gospel. You need to read about Jesus, because if you read about Jesus, you'd see that that is not the way he behaved, and it's not the way he wants us to behave.
He doesn't want us to go off to prayer meetings.
He wants us to pray, and he wants me to be a helpful person to you. Dave, so that where I see you in need, I've got to meet your need. Your greatest need is to get right with God. Your next need might be to be fed.
So there's a starving man in the middle of Africa, and you're going to go out and tell him to be right with God.
Both, right with God and food for his belly. But if I can't do both, better for him to get right with God and not go to hell.
Yeah, isn't it just American cultural imperialism again, you see? There's the man in the country, and what you're doing is imposing the Western culture.
Well, Philip, I must tell you that Christianity is not Western, that at the present moment the greatest spread of Christianity is taking place in the third world, and the greatest decline of Christianity is in the Western world, that Christianity had its origin in Judaism, and that Jesus was a Jew, and that if Westerns wish to claim it now, I would be delighted. If there's a great movement of the Western world back to Christianity, it would be fantastic. But that isn't where it's happening, and it isn't Western.
Why isn't it happening there? Because Western people are too educated for it.
No, Western people are smug and self-satisfied with no good reason to be, because they are the cause of terrific problems in the world. It is the Western world which has done the Nuremberg trials and the terrible atrocities. It is those Western worlds. Now, there's nothing too clever about them. They are completely bankrupt morally.
Yeah, isn't
they
that...
cannot run their countries properly. They're riddled with selfishness through and through. And that is also because they've turned their back on God.
Isn't that the status quo capitalist Western world that the Christians are supporting? That are encouraging people, don't worry about your problems, just worry about your pie in the sky.
No, I'm sorry, Philip.
So they're actually reinforcing that.
I'm sorry, Philip. I said if you would read a gospel, you would see that Jesus is concerned about people and their needs.
Well, Jesus may be, but the church people aren't, are they?
No, that's not true, Philip. Everywhere where Christians have taken the gospel, they have set up schools and hospitals and immediately tried to help people where they were. And if you look at the whole history of the missionary movement, you will see that the best people they transported, and they claimed they were the best, immediately tried to help people. If they made mistakes in what they thought was good for them, they might have. But their one aim was to try and be helpful wherever they went.
But the church people I see are just the middle-class, right-wing Australians who have been bashing the convicts ever since that early Anglican minister. What was his name? Marsden.
Well, Philip, I'm sorry if that's the ones you've seen. You'll have to come with me next Sunday. Who are not like that, because I don't believe the ones where I go are like that at all.
But the church, it's just full of hypocrites, though. I mean, people practice hypocrisy. It's the easiest way to practice hypocrisy with safety.
Yes, happy. Philip, let me say, I don't know by what standard you make that judgment, but my doctor tells me that there are many people in the surgery with nothing wrong with them. But it's never occurred to me to stay away when there's something wrong with me. Now, if you're saying that, I'm saying that There may be many reasons. The church, there'll be non-Christians there because we don't ever kick anyone out, because we're committed to loving people. We're committed to long-suffering and patience. That's part of our deal. So we don't put the skids under people. We don't ask them at the door if they're Christians or non-Christians and kick them out. And we've got all sorts of people who've been kicked out of every other organisation because no one's got sufficient patience to bear with them. And there are always a few screwballs who can't, no one else can put up with them. But we do because we're committed to trying to be kind to people. Then, what are the Christians claiming? All they're claiming is to be sinful people who've been forgiven. So if you find them sinful, that's all they're claiming.
Yeah, that's what you see them as. Wowzers who are constantly telling us how they've got to be good and all the rest of it, but they never are. You take Fred Null and all his group there. All they tell us is what we're not to be doing and how we're to be good. But he enjoys going along and watching those dirty movies, doesn't he?
I think you'll have to get Fred to answer for himself. I'm not in any position to make an answer for him. But once again, let me say that if he were to act like Jesus, he'd be running true to form, true to the form I'm talking about, and that's what I'm asking you to do, to look at Jesus. And if your criticisms are right, well then what we need to do is to call on the churches to act like Jesus. But you see, back
well, now,
to
there's
Jesus,
your
we've
problem.
Got to go
there's
all
your
the
problem.
Time.
So you say to me, I can't bring on the revolution because I can't tell people to be I can't show people how to be unselfish. What you're going on about is you want everyone to be like Jesus, unselfish. Well, if I can't do it, why don't you think you can do it?
Well, I'm saying I can't do it, but Jesus claims that he will come and change us so that we can.
And so, I'm actually changed and
I don't think I've finished.
And you?
I am saying that I have already challenged you to come and meet the church people where I am. And I'm saying that I think you will find that they are not the way I'm saying, the way that you are saying they are. Sorry, say that again. I'm saying they are not like you are, you say they are.
So, that's it. What you're really saying, it's a good Freudian slip, is that they are better people. They are good people.
No.
And that's what it's all about.
I'm saying they're trying to be unselfish.
They're trying. But big deal. So my revolutionary mates are trying to be unselfish. So your Christian mates are trying to be unselfish. So?
Yeah.
Is that all it is?
No. Your revolutionary mates happen to be wrong. Because they have misunderstood the whole deal about life. What I'm saying is God is there. If Jesus is not God, then we're completely up the spout. Completely up the spout. And I'm saying it's got nothing to do with who are living better lives, because I don't know how we'll ever work that out without God. I don't know how we could make a judgment as to whether your mob are doing a better thing than my mob, because I don't know how we'll work out what is good in the end, because we'll have as many goods as we've got you and me's.
Well, what's going to happen to these good people when your God does what he wants to do with people?
Well, if they're rebellious against him, they'll get what rebellion deserves.
Yeah, you mean there's someone who's a good person, never heard about your God, trying to do the right thing, trying to be unselfish, just like your God wants him to try and be like unselfish, but he doesn't know anything about your God. He gets the chopper. Whereas your local Christian...
Which one are you speaking about now?
Good
Who
man.
Is this person?
Good man.
Whereabouts?
I don't know. Never heard about your God.
Oh, never heard about. Well, that's what I want to know. If he's never heard about God, then I don't know in the end what's going to happen to him. God will know best what to do with him. It's you that worries me, see, because you have heard. That's what I'm worried about. Now, I don't know what he's turned his back on, but you have turned your back straight on the best revelation. See, if you will not take out a New Testament and look at Jesus, and if I'm right, I'll rise up in the day of judgment and say, but Philip, I've tried again and again to get you to look.
But you tell me Jesus wants me to be unselfish.
I told you that Jesus wants you to obey him.
But if I obey him, will that make me unselfish?
It will make you less selfish than you are now.
So you see, Christians think they're better, don't they?
Changed.
Better, for the better?
Better than they were, yes.
Better than the person next to them?
No, make no judgments about the person next to them.
Well, if they're no better than the person next to them, why should they get a special deal with God? If they are better than the person next to them, don't they think they're...
Well, let me ask you this question. Let's suppose that three of us live in a house together. you, me, and a third. And
you a Christian too?
Don't matter, I don't care, you can have anybody you like. Let us suppose that the third person constantly offers you his friendship, and you constantly refuse it. Let us suppose he offers, I'm sorry, we'll do it another way. Let us suppose he offers you his friendship and you accept it, and you've got a good working relationship together. Let us suppose he offers me his friendship, and I pretend he isn't there, and I just ignore him. Right? I'm so sorry, Philip, I've forgotten the question.
That's all right, I've forgotten the answer.
It's so long to work out the illustration. I forgot what I was illustrating.
What? What's that? I was actually sending a message to see if supper was on the way.
What? Yeah, well, let's. John's obviously tiring at this stage of the game, isn't he? What are the questions we've left off? Take 5 minutes or so.
We've left off. Do you have to go to church to be a Christian?
Those who have never heard the gospel.
What about those who've never heard the gospel? We've left out. Why bother? Oh, because it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Because if I'm right, you can.
I'll come back to why bother. That's an easy one. What other questions have you heard that you would think that we've left out?
Well, so you're saying all you have to do to be a Christian is just try and be like Christ?
No, I'm saying that what you've got to do is you've got to relate to Jesus in a proper way. You've got to relate to him in a proper way. And he comes before us and claims to be God. And he says he'll enhance your life like all proper relationships do, provided you treat him like God. You treat him like God, he'll treat you properly. Now, that's what I'm really saying.
My Catholic Church is all very the same.
Yeah, what's we got from that now, John?
They disagree for all sorts of reasons. Some of them are because they don't believe the Bible is the Word of God, and therefore they're bound to disagree. They don't agree at the basic canon. Some of them disagree because of old historical problems, which they haven't been very good at solving. And some of them don't disagree at all, but because they're different temperamentally, they just meet and do different things. And I'm saying they're sinful people, and some of them aren't Christians, and some of them can't even be bothered to try and iron out the differences because they're so unimportant to us. But it's interesting to me to see on some occasions where the Christians actually do get together, and generally at the point of trying to urge other people to come to Christ because they think it's worth doing. So do you want to come back on that?
Is it Christianity just a personal thing?
Yes.
Individual thing?
It's personal. It's personal with you and God. Get that one rattled out together. Get that one sorted out. If Jesus is God, then you ought to relate to him as God, and the rest will fall into place from then on.
I don't have to worry about anybody else. Don't have to go to church.
I'm saying if you have to go to church, if Jesus says you'll have to go to church. But if you're not prepared to do what Jesus says, skip it. You're not prepared to become a Christian. Well, you'll have to tell me in what way it does invalidate it. I'm saying it substantiates it. That's what I've been saying.
Six-day creation?
Depends. Oh, six-day creation, that one. Well, I'm not actually too sure whether you want to be, it'll depend, I'm trying to work out which line's the best line to take. Your evolutionary hypothesis may or may not stand the test of time. But in my lifetime, it's getting more and more uneasily sat on, lived with. Now, it may last the test of time, but it mightn't. But I've lived long enough to see hypotheses come and go. And I grew up as a child where the atom was the smallest part of an element that could exist in the free state. And you'll find that textbook by Booth and Nichols now in the...
Third hand.
No, you don't find it anywhere. Because that theory went down the plug hole. Now, I'm saying the other thing too is, I don't really think those two things talk about the same thing. I don't think Genesis, the writer of Genesis, is interested to give you scientific information about the creation, and I don't think science has got anything to do with giving us theological information. And I think to try and weld those two disciplines together is a bog for us all around. I want to separate them.
David?
There are many different ways people interpret the Bible.
Yes.
What is the truth?
might be God's revelation to us, but then we still interpret it differently.
Correct.
What makes you so conceited to say that the way you interpret it is the truth?
I don't. I'm asking you to read it and see what you think and act on it. And that is the way every responsible person must act. And I'm saying that is how I've acted. I've read it, and it seems crystal clear to me, and I've acted on it, and I'm inviting you to do the same. And I cannot see how you can be responsible and not do it.
Anna?
Well, he is claiming not to be a martyr. He is claiming to be something quite more than that, and I would have thought his resurrection from the dead makes him something quite different from simply a person who died for what he believed to be true. He did do that, but he seems to me to be quite different than that.
Aren't you Christians a whole lot of con artists going on conferences planning all that?
Well, I'm saying that I would be if it wasn't true. But I'm practicing to say what I believe to be true, because it's easier for me to work it out before I get into the situation, because I'm often excited and nervous. But if I can think it out clearly beforehand, it's so much better.
John, stop. Listen. Do you ever get nervous when you preach the gospel?
Always.
Thank you.
Always.
We talk about the God that has created things.
Yeah.
Who created God?
Well, nobody. By definition. Because you can't have anybody who precedes God, he is always there. Well, how can it be any other way? I mean, what do you think was always there? Nothing. Do you think nothing was always there? What I'm saying is, once you say that anything always was, something always was. And I can't see any difference between God always wasing and nothing always wasing.
Right? Okay. Stop.
What makes you think that a man can rise from the dead?
Because we've got excellent documentation that it happened, and we need to have it. Now, the four Gospels all bear witness to that, and they bear witness specifically with the people who actually saw Jesus alive. When Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, 10 years after the resurrection of Jesus, the document has never been held in question about its authenticity. It's never been held in question about it being an ancient document. Paul lists the people who saw Jesus alive, and he says at the end of it, the greater bulk of them are still alive. That is, any Tom, Dick and Harry in Jerusalem could bear witness to what he was saying. I think that's very good evidence.
Jeremy?
If you say your God is God of love, why do you select some people go to hell?
Because they refuse to have his love. And if they don't go to hell, what's the alternative? How did the world get mucked up in the first place? It got mucked up because people turned their back on God and said, stay out of my life, you won't be God at me. God sends Jesus into the world so their sins can be forgiven, so it can be restored again. And so if they aren't excluded from God, where are we? We're right back to square one again. You've got the people who will worship God and the people who spit in God's eye, so we'll have the whole shambolic thing all over again. And God says it's not going to happen again like that.
If God knows about who's going to go to heaven and who's going to go to hell, why doesn't he stop it? Why doesn't he make them go to heaven?
Why? Because you're a true person. You want God to shove you around? He wants you to make a genuine response of friendship. So once he makes you do it, he's actually stopped you being you. He won't do that.
Stephen?
Not good unless they're serving God. They're a menace to all of us. And I'll tell you why they're a menace. The better they are, they say to all mankind, turning back to Christ is utterly irrelevant. And I'm saying, better you be dead drunk in the gutter, because no one will want to be like that if you're not a Christian. The better you are apart from Christ, the more damage you do to all of us.
It's all right. Sorry, say it again.
Isn't it blackmail to say, believe me or I'll send you to hell?
No, it happens to be reality. It's exactly the same notice at the top of the gap. It says, don't jump over, you'll smash your head on the bottom. I put it in exactly the same category. If you fly in the face of reality, it crushes you. Now, I haven't made Jesus God. He just happens to be. But he graciously offers you a part in the creation in harmony with himself and life forever afterwards. And he warns you of the consequence of shunning that aside. And I think that's a fair enough deal. Actually,
Archie?
If your God is the creator and he's good, why did he make the devil?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry about that. But I'll tell you why I go on being a Christian.
Really?
Well, I must make an offence for that, surely. If I cannot answer Christian, I've got to say why I go on being a believer, don't I? And I'm saying, when God doesn't tell us something, there's no way of finding out. Any more than if I don't tell you something about me, you can find out. But what you do know about me is not invalidated by what you don't.
Okay. It actually is very helpful, of course, to remember that we not only we don't know everything, we don't have to know everything. I mean, who does know everything?
Yeah. It would be very easy in that way to explain every internal contradiction within Christianity by saying, well, the Bible doesn't tell us that, so why worry about it?
Well, brother, you can worry yourself because you're sick about it, but you still won't know if you're right.
How many internal contradictions are you working on, John, do you reckon?
I'm working on the contradiction of the God-man. I work on the contradiction...
What's the contradiction there?
Well, how can God both be God and man?
Simply created you in his image.
Well...
What's the next one?
My next one... I don't think you've done it. The next problem is, how does the immortal die? That is a problem to me, not an overwhelming one, but it's a problem. The problem is, how can God be sovereign and me be responsible? That's another contradiction.
Now, are these contradictions or are they contraries? Is there a difference?
See, I think at this stage I will play my violin solo. I wanted to say I could see a doggy and a pussy, but I don't think I'll say anything.
See, John,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Very important. Gordon's playing a fun game that people love to play. They love to use logic categories, but they don't mean them in the same sense that the logicians mean them. It's like the word proof. Mm. All right? The word proof can mean 100 different things,
yep.
But they usually mean by it, give me mathematical proof,
yep.
When they don't like you.
Yep.
They don't mean that any other. Prove you love me, dear. Really got to do with mathematics.
I should imagine.
The word contradictory has actually got a very technical, very difficult meaning, right? Very close in. That it is impossible for both these things to be true at the same time.
I see. I want to use the word paradox, I think.
Well, you've got to move to a better word. It's a much better word because it's in a seeming contradiction. Because there's lots of things.
That's right.
There are lots of contradictions that the average non-Christian believes in, which are, if you use it like that, a classic burning, you always remember it, I don't understand it, they don't either. Are light is light wave or particles?
Thank you for listening to the talks on philipjensen.com. Please check our copyright page before recording or reproducing any material on philipjensen.com.